What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is the Director of Governmental Affairs for J Street, its chief lobbyist, Dylan Williams. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom, it's springtime, the season of hope and accentuating the positive, a time for new beginnings and fresh starts. It's also the time for spring cleaning, and the upcoming Festival of Passover is the perfect time to do all of that. In fact, one of the four names of Pesach is Chag Ha'aviv, the holiday of the spring. Here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, the trees are turning green, the flowers are starting to bloom, and the air is lovely, fresh, and warm. It's a good time to be alive. Undoubtedly, there was a spring festival observed long before the events of the Exodus led to the creation of the holiday of Passover. After all, spring is celebrated in every culture and nearly every religion, too. In our Seder celebrations, the orderly meal we hold the first two nights of Pesach that teaches the meaning and story of freedom in a rich and wonderful variety of ways, spring is featured in the green vegetables we dip in salt water and in the hard-boiled egg that symbolizes the rebirth of spring. The magnificent love poem Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, is chanted on Passover, the Shabbat of Passover, actually, filled with images of gardens and growth, of love in the flowering springtime, a wonderful way to celebrate this most beautiful and verdant of seasons. Until, of course, you realize that you have to clean, cook, and basically work yourself to the bone preparing for the ultimate festival of freedom. And if, like me and my wife, you are hosting a sizable Seder the first night of Passover, you know that you are purchasing Pesach food supplies, cleaning, removing all the leavened material from your home, preparing all the delicious and hard-to-make foods for the complex meal without regular leavened products, plus preparing all the ritual foods as well, and generally working a second full-time job as a kitchen and cleaning slave, preparing for the holiday of liberation. It's as though we work like our ancestors did in Egyptian slavery just so we can fully appreciate the joy of freedom. Still, it's a beautiful time of year, and more people celebrate Pesach than just about any Jewish holiday or ritual the whole rest of the year. And so, to play us in this morning, here's some of our pre-Passover preview of Pesach music. It's a song about matzah. Unsurprisingly, from the Seder we will celebrate a week from Monday night, Ha'lachma Anya, this is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate when they left the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat. In a madrigally version from the Western Winds, Ha'lachma Anya.
Benechorim.
That was the Western Winds version of Halach Ma'anya, Matzah, the Bread of Affliction. By the way, do you know what you call somebody who loves eating unleavened bread? A matzakist. Get it? A combination of matzah and masochist? Never mind. Anyway, just continue to prepare to enjoy eating matzah next week. When we come back on Too Jewish This Morning, you'll meet our guest, Dylan Williams, chief lobbyist for the rising liberal to moderate Israel advocacy group J Street, which is celebrating its fifth birthday as one of the most interesting and controversial Jewish organizations in America. Find out what makes J Street go when we come back on Too Jewish.
Folks, it's time you experience the Jim Click difference at Jim Click Mazda. Get more discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection with two Mazda locations to serve you. The all-new 2014 Mazda 6 is now in stock and ready for immediate delivery. And folks, it's all-new body style. It looks absolutely great. And it's priced at only $249 a month. And the 2013 Mazda 3 is now a bid price of just $15,999. More discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection. 10 brands to choose from. That's the car to save. That's the Jim Click difference.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Dylan Williams. He's Director of Government Affairs for J Street. He served previously as Counsel for Foreign Relations, Trade, and Immigration to U.S. Senator Olympia Snowe. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So J Street has been kind of a rising star, but also a somewhat controversial one in the Jewish political firmament, if such a thing exists. Tell us a little bit about the specifics of what the Director of Government Affairs does. I thought it was all kind of government affairs.
Director of Government Affairs is a fancy way of saying I'm the chief lobbyist for J Street. My team and I have relationships with almost every office on Capitol Hill, as well as many officials in the administration. We're in regular communication with all of these offices, sharing our views on the developments on the ground in Israel and the Palestinian territories, as well as helping them understand the kind of statements that the majority of the Jewish American community and the pro-Israel community would like to see coming out of Congress and the administration.
Yeah, I think it's very important for people to realize that J Street is strongly pro-Israel, but might have a different political point of view from, say, AIPAC. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a fair assessment. You know, on 85% of things, J Street agrees with some of the groups that have existed in D.C. for longer than us. But it's really on that 15% regarding the two-state resolution and what exactly the American role should be that there are sometimes some disagreements. But more and more, it's clear that that's where Israel's true security needs are actually not being met. You know, we lobby for strong U.S.-Israel security, military, and intelligence cooperation. We lobby for U.S. assistance to Israel. But beyond that, what Israel needs to remain a democratic state with the Jewish character is a resolution to the conflict with the Palestinians. And in that regard, the United States government and the United States Congress have been remiss and really shirked the duties of a true friend to Israel. That's where J Street comes in. We want to help Congress and the president understand that the vast majority of our community actually wants the United States to take a bolder, more active role to actually conclude a resolution to that conflict.
So a totally different tack. Are your parents proud to describe that you're a lobbyist professionally?
Is this any
kind of a job for a nice Jewish boy?
My parents were Peace Corps hippies, but have since moderated and mainstreamed their views. They were, I think it was more difficult when I told them I was going to law school and becoming a lawyer, but no, they are very happy that I've moved into advocacy, particularly pro-Israel advocacy. You know, they've always been internationally engaged and getting America's support for Israel on the right path is really important to them as any other pro-Israel American.
We will talk much more with Dylan Williams about J Street when we come back this morning on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations who provide scholarships for kids in kindergarten through 12th grade to go to qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel's Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Join over 750 supporters last year who gave money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income tax. New this year, there's an additional tax credit, the switcher credit. It increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,003 for single filers and $2,006 for married couples filing jointly. When we fight every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to foster a Jewish identity for our community's kids. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive financial aid in order to get a Jewish education. Call 647-8442, again, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Give the gift of education. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at tojewishradio@yahoo.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio, or visit our website, tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. To continue our pre-Pesach theme, just a week and a day to go till Seder, here's a new mashup from the a cappella vocal group 613. Like the Maccabees, kinda, and their song P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R.
613, Afikoman. Now we're back at the Seder, we're leaning to the left. Side, 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 side. It's clear that this night is different from all other nights, 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 nights. Cut the banter. Now Zadie's making kiddush, so we stand up. We say poré, pre-hagaf, and we shake in New York. My Sparty cousin, D. Rice, 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 rice. And baby, rice. Tonight, say.
Flavorful, that's how I like my matzo balls. Got Pharaoh to let my people go, so we celebrate with unrisen dough. And yes, we'll make a fuss. Got a relative sitting next to us, little brother asking for questions, and I'm about to dip some vegetable. Throwing back 4 cups of wine, and after dinner time. The Afikoman I must find. So let's go, oh,
let's go.
Tonight the Seder's ours, ours, ours. Made sure dessert is par, 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 par. If it's hummus, we will starve, 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 stop, stop, starve. Because it's P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R. Horseradish burns my tongue, 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 tongue. There's matzo in my tongue, 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 tongue. The table's full of crumbs, 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 crumbs. Because it's P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R. Raise that kid's cup, 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 cup. Raise that kid's cup, 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 cup.
Raise that kid's cup, 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 cup.
Raise that kid's cup, 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 cup.
Two, three.
So put your hands up as we tell the story how we got our freedom. Take Israel, me, me trying. My tummy's filling up, but my heart is filling with pride, 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 pride.
Get married tonight.
That was 613 and their song, borrowed and transformed from Usher, called P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R. That's Passover for those of you scoring at home. We welcome our expert on Israel, our maven, Guy Gelbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Good morning, Guy. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Well, big visitor coming to Israel this week. President Obama makes his first official visit since being elected president to Israel. Israelis are very excited. Maybe has to cut the trip short if a pope is elected, but nonetheless, a big deal.
Yes, indeed. President Obama is planning his visit to Israel, and it's very exciting, especially for Israelis that live far away from Jerusalem. The ones that do live in Jerusalem are probably planning on all the traffic jams that will take place along the visit. I still recall the time that President Clinton visited Israel. My girlfriend at that time, my wife today in Baal, was on her way back home from her military service, and she was on the bus on the freeway. Apparently, the security people of the visit decided they need to check every small hole along the way where the presidential cars are going to go by. My wife was stuck on the freeway for over 10 hours in the bus.
Oh, my God.
Just to let them pass.
Hmm.
So, you know, such a visit has a lot of parts to it. It's a very complicated visit, very interesting. And mainly the people that live in the area where the visit takes place, oh, God, they will suffer from traffic jams. And, you know, they won't care about the news. They won't care about what are the messages they'll care about kept going on time to work. So that's part of the story, a different perspective, I think, maybe of the visit.
You know, it's funny. It reminds me when I lived in Israel, it was 91, 92, and James Baker was there frequently. And, you know, I didn't have a car, so I could walk around all the roadblocks. But every time the Secretary of State came or, you know, a head of state came in Jerusalem, it just messes up everything.
Yeah, you know, the traffic in Jerusalem is not the best traffic on any given day.
No, it's always bad.
But when you have a significant visitor with all the cars and security checks and all of that, oh, God, that is really, really challenging. And from some reason, a lot of leaders worldwide love to come to Jerusalem. They always want to go and visit the Kotel. They always want to see around. Usually they go also to Yad Vashem, which I think is very important because it does teach us world's leaders about a significant historical event.
Well, it teaches them the Holocaust, gives them a connection. It helps them understand how important it is to Israel's own identity, I think.
True, true. It is extremely important, I think, to Israel and to the Jewish people worldwide. And I think it's very important that, world leaders come there in order to make sure that, you know, never again, as we always say. But to complete on a lighter note, during his visit in Israel, Obama will need to eat kosher food. So I wonder how we will handle that part. You know, it's sometimes it is challenging.
I imagine he will eat well nonetheless. Guy, we look forward to hearing reports of this fascinating visit, and maybe some substantive issues will be discussed too. Thanks. We will talk next week.
See you next week.
In preparation for Pesach, our Jewish poetry slam this morning is on perhaps the most elemental part of the Passover Seder, the often overlooked bowl of salt water on the table, from Marge Piercy's poem of the same name. It is a bowl of tears on the table, into which we dip the parsley, into which we dip the egg. It is a miniature ocean on the table, salt as the sea of reeds through which they were to pass. Not to safety, never to safety, but to where they were promised they would, if they chose, be free. It is the salt water of our sweat, pressed through our skin as the body labors, for we are bidden not only to rest on the seventh day, but work on the others. And the brain, too, in its fever of creation exudes salt like the sea, salt like our blood, salt like the waters of the womb, the salt of regret, and the salt of effort. That was Marge Piercy's poem for the Seder table. First Seder is a week from tomorrow night, March 25th, called Saltwater. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, last week we started speaking about the Jewish tendency to focus on the negative, accentuate the negative, talking about persecution, thinking about any anti-Semitic act anywhere in the world as an immediate potential tragedy. Obviously, this goes back in part to our long history of persecution, but it doesn't seem to be mirrored by the same enthusiasm always for Torah, for Jewish study, for Jewish engagement on other issues. What do you think is behind that today when Jews live in greater freedom in the United States probably than they have ever in history, in which Israel is the largest Jewish country probably that's ever existed in population, in which many things are so positive for Jewish life?
Right. I mean, I think that both in the U.S. and in Israel and in many other countries around the world today, Jews have an opportunity to contribute creatively to the societies in which they live, artistically, scientifically, politically, in many ways. And that degree of opportunity is unprecedented. However, I think there is this leftover habit from the old days, certainly among the older generation, if not also the younger generation, of being super vigilant for signs that that situation is about to be threatened or will somehow be changed by the emergence of a new Haman or a new Hitler or a new Pharaoh or whatever villain you want to refer to in whatever part of history you're looking at. We always think about the Spanish Inquisition. We think about the Holocaust. And I dare say that if I were to quantify the number of emails I get from particularly Jewish people who are, let's say, my age and older as opposed to my age and younger, and divide them into sort of new stories about threats or examples of menaces or something negative lurking on the horizon or some bad thing, some Jewish kid somewhere was insulted by bullies on his way to school, right? If I were to measure those against how many emails I get with, I heard a great Dvar Torah, or here's a wonderful opportunity for studying some new aspect of Judaism, or for singing in a Jewish band, or for engaging in Jewish art, whatever that might mean. I would say that the first category outnumbers the second by at least 10 to 1, if not more. And among significantly older people, the disproportion is even greater. I mean, I was talking with a friend the other day about his father. All the emails he gets from his father are like threats to Jews around the world, and none of it has to do with opportunities to enrich the guy's own Jewish existence or Jewish knowledge or like range of Jewish behaviors. And the question really is, why can't we change that? Why can't we focus on the positive? Or is it just that we are a nation that's born to kvetch?
As the book says, well, we know we're good at kvetching. I wonder if we could be good at kvelling too. It's an interesting question. We'll keep exploring it. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rabbi Bloom was testing children in his religious school class to see if they could understand the concept of going to heaven. So he asked, "Boys and girls, if I sold my house and car and gave all my money to the shul, would that let me go to heaven?" "No," the children shouted. "Okay," said the rabbi, "if I cleaned the shul every day, washed all our stained glass windows inside and out, and kept every prayer book neat and tidy on the shelves, would that let me get to heaven?" Again, the answer was, "No." Rabbi Bloom was really beginning to enjoy this. "Well then, children," he asked, "if I was the kindest person in the whole world to animals, and if I gave pieces of chalva and kosher candy to every boy and girl in the city, and if I promised never to shout at any of you, would that let me go to heaven?" Again, the children shouted, "No!" "Well," Rabbi Bloom continued, "how can I get to heaven?" And Aaron, a six-year-old, shouted, "You gotta be dead, Rabbi!" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and stay alive. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is the second in the book of Leviticus, Tzav, the section that establishes the rules for the various sacrifices offered in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan, and in the temple in Jerusalem. There are many different types of sacrifices commanded, burnt offerings, guilt offerings, sin offerings, and so on. But one group of sacrificial offerings stands out, the offerings of peace, the Zevach Shlamim. And among this higher category of offerings, one in particular rises even higher, the Zevach Todah, the Thanksgiving offering. The rabbis thought so highly of thanksgiving to God, they are quoted in the Talmud saying that when the Messiah comes, all sacrifices will have completed their mission. All will be discontinued with one exception, the Thanksgiving offering. That sacrifice will last forever. Even in a perfect world, we must remember to give thanks, to be grateful for what we have. As we approach the holiday of Pesach, we do well to remember that gratitude for what we have is both the most essential of all religious motivations and the hardest to keep in mind. If we can each take a moment today to write or email or text or phone our thanks to somebody who is important in our lives, even to post it on Facebook, we will begin to renew this great commitment of our Torah portion of Tzav, for we have much for which to be grateful. And if we can also take a moment to thank God for what we have, to be more conscious of those who have less, we will begin to make this a better world. For thanksgiving should not lead us to complacency, but to humility and gratitude. This Shabbat is also the great Sabbath that precedes Passover, called Shabbat HaGadol. The name is taken from its famous Haftarah, from the prophets, which proclaims the coming of the great and awesome Day of God, in which the prophet of Elijah will come and turn the hearts of children to their parents, and the hearts of parents to their children. As the father of two teenagers and a tween, I can promise you that there are days when it seems like it will take all of God's direct intervention to make that prophecy occur. But there are also days when it seems as though Elijah's arrival must be imminent and things go well, for which we as parents must always remember to be grateful, whether or not the Messiah is actually coming yet. When we come back on Too Jewish, the brilliant young lobbyist Dylan Williams of J Street will explain why a new Jewish lobbying group is taking D.C. and maybe the Jewish world by storm. Find out why when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Folks, it's time for you to experience the Jim Click Kia difference. Get more discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection. 2013 Kia Soul is now starting at just $14,988 and only $159 a month. So drive home the fuel-efficient 2013 Kia Rio, special event price only $159 a month. And remember, every Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. More discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection, 10 brands to choose from. That's the power to save. That's the Jim Click difference. Kia, the power to surprise.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
After 5 interminable weeks of negotiations, Israel has a government and Bibi Netanyahu is the prime minister. Israel's new governing coalition will be sworn in soon. A center-right grouping of Netanyahu's right-wing Likud Beitenu faction, the centrist Yesh Atid party of Yair Lapid, the religious nationalist Jewish Home party of Naftali Bennett, the center-left Hatnua party led by Tzipi Livni, and the tiny centrist Kadima, just 2 seats now, once the ruling party itself. In total, the coalition will include 70 of the Knesset's 120 members, a reasonable majority. The new government's priorities will be to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons, enact budget reform, expand Israel's mandatory military conscription to include the ultra-Orthodox, and lower the cost of living, according to Netanyahu. Above all, Netanyahu said at his cabinet meeting, the major security challenges we must address are piling up around us. The coalition deal is a bittersweet victory at best for Israel's prime minister. He won a disappointing 31 seats at the ballot box in January with his combined vote with Likud and Yisrael Beitenu. That divided vote has turned into a divided government, and he'll have to lead with ambitious rivals by his side. The divisions have grown more intense since the election. Yesh Atid chairman Yair Lapid and Jewish Home leader Naftali Bennett formed an alliance after the vote and stuck to it. He's a much weaker prime minister, said Hebrew University political science professor Shlomo Avineri. We see the emergence of two popular leaders who are not constrained by internal party institutions and can dictate to their own parties whatever policies they wish. Not so much for Netanyahu. By forming the coalition days before his final deadline, Netanyahu gained another term as prime minister. And because his party controls the foreign and defense ministries, Likud's Moshe Ya'alon is slated to be the next defense minister, Netanyahu will be able to preserve the status quo regarding security issues and Iran. In managing his coalition, Netanyahu's biggest challenge will be including Haredi Orthodox men in Israel's mandatory draft, one of Israel's burning political issues. Yesh Atid campaigned on a platform of drafting nearly all Haredim, who currently receive exemptions if they stay in yeshiva, along with Bennett, a pro-settler politician who strongly favors Haredi male conscription. Yair Lapid has been pushing for a strict draft law. Not wanting to alienate the ultra-Orthodox, a traditional support base for him, Netanyahu has pushed for a more lenient version. The compromise will be that Haredim will be subject to the draft at age 22, not 18, like the rest of Israelis. And up to 2,000 Haredim could continue to receive exemptions, far higher than the limit of 400 that Lapid had sought, although much lower than exists at present. The new political leaders are capable of reaching an agreement that will gradually change the rules of the game, said Bar-Ilan University political science professor Eitan Gilboa. Avineri is skeptical that the Haredim will obey any draft law reached without the involvement of the Haredi parties. The only way of seriously extending the ultra-Orthodox draft is to do it with negotiations with at least one of the parties and getting a wishy-washy compromise, Avineri said. You're not going to get it by drafting thousands of Haredim against their will. Draft reform is one of Lapid's signature issues, but his more difficult task may be succeeding as finance minister. For a media personality who entered politics just a year ago with a campaign promising common sense policies and new politics, it will be a challenge to maintain his appeal while actually being a politician, especially trying to make the Israeli economy more egalitarian, as Yesh Atid has promised. Lapid's campaign slogan was, "Where's the money?" He promised not to raise taxes on the middle class, but facing a budget deficit of $10 billion, Lapid may become the face of some unpopular spending cuts or tax hikes. That could condemn the fate of his Yesh Atid to that of the other Israeli centrist parties that flamed and burned out. Lapid is in danger, said Hebrew University professor Gideon Rahat. What happened to the rest of the centrist parties is they disappeared in 2 or 3 years, but if he does things differently, he may be able to hold on. For his part, the ambitious Naftali Bennett, formerly Netanyahu's chief of staff, supposedly does not get along with Netanyahu. Personal rivalries could cause rifts in the government should Bennett, Lapid, and Netanyahu disagree on sensitive issues, which I predict here on Too Jewish they will. Still, Israel has a government, and in advance of President Obama's upcoming visit to the country. Speaking of Obama's visit, freed Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit has joined the call on Obama to release spy for Israel Jonathan Pollard from American captivity. Shalit signed an online petition asking Obama to commute Pollard's life sentence to time served already. "I've signed a petition and call on you to do the same. Freedom is a great gift and privilege," Shalit posted. "I thank those who worked for my release, and now I ask you to join the struggle to save Pollard." More than 150,000 Israelis have signed the petition. It appears in Hebrew and English, was put online in February, and will be hand-delivered to Obama during his visit to Israel soon, according to the Justice for Jonathan Pollard organization. Shalit was freed for more than 5 years of captivity by Hamas terrorists in October of 2011. Jonathan Pollard's wife Esther also appealed to Obama during an interview with Israel's Channel 2. "Mr. President, Jonathan and I are asking for your compassion, and your mercy," she said in English. "The greatest dream that Jonathan and I have is that he will be home for Passover this year, sit next to me at the Passover Seder to drink his cup of wine finally, after 28 years in prison as a free man." Pollard, the civilian U.S. Navy intelligence analyst who spied for Israel, was sentenced to life in prison in 1987, despite a plea bargain in which he admitted his guilt. The calls to release Pollard have intensified in the last year, with pleas from lawmakers and former top officials of both U.S. political parties. And there is transition afoot in rabbinical seminaries in America. Rabbi David Ellenson, the chancellor of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, a friend and past guest of Too Jewish, will retire in another year. The search for his replacement is underway. And now, at a much smaller institution, it was announced that Rabbi Dan Ehrenkrantz will step down as president of the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. Last month, Ehrenkrantz released a statement announcing he would be leaving the position he held for more than a decade at the college outside of Philadelphia. "As I look at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College today, I see an organization uniquely poised to lead and guide the Jewish community," Ehrenkrantz said. "I'm proud of what we've accomplished. It's been a tremendous blessing for me to advance the vision and serve the people of the Reconstructionist movement." Ehrenkrantz was credited with overseeing a $50 million fundraising campaign at the RRC, said to be the largest in their history, and initiating its first strategic plan. David Roberts, chair of RRC's board, said he reluctantly accepted the resignation. A search committee to find a replacement will soon be convened. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish this morning our guest, Dylan Williams. He's Director of Government Affairs, the chief lobbyist for J Street in Washington. He previously served U.S. Senator Olympia Snowe, a Republican of Maine, as the Counsel for Foreign Relations, Trade, and Immigration. He has more than a decade of experience in U.S. government work, working with U.S. government officials and private clients. Just a quick question. You're born in Honolulu.
That's right.
Besides sharing a Hawaiian connection with President Obama, you know, how does that affect your work?
That's a great question. I mean, it's interesting. I was born in the same hospital as the president and graduated from the same school.
So you went to Punahou also?
Exactly. Growing up in a smaller Jewish community, I think it really kind of sharpens your perspective on the role that Jewish Americans play in American public life, and particularly pro-Israel advocacy. And I think that's something I imagine I would share with a lot of the communities here in Arizona, particularly in Tucson. At the same time, it also opened my eyes up to different cultures and international perspectives that you typically don't get in some parts of the country, Hawaii being a very international, multiracial, multi-ethnic place. And I think that's those things have combined to kind of push me towards the role I play now for J Street.
So let's explore a little bit. Israel is certainly a multi-ethnic area. We often say that it's a really nice country in a really bad neighborhood. Mm. But part of living in that bad neighborhood is finding ways to work with a variety of regimes and peoples who have very different aspirations. In what way does J Street encourage our representatives to, let's say, urge Israel to work in directions of cooperation?
I mean, first and foremost, we help Congress understand that Israel does have very real, legitimate security concerns that almost no other country in the world has, given the neighborhood it's in and the history of conflict it has with those neighbors. But beyond supporting the core pro-Israel issues that, we are very grateful that other groups have done for 30 years before us, like promoting security cooperation, promoting U.S. military assistance to Israel, we really help members of Congress understand how vital it is to Israel's security that the two-state resolution not remain on the back burner. And what we help them understand is this very significant demographic shift that is taking place between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River, in which in that area of land, Jews will soon be outnumbered by Arabs. And at that point, the state of Israel faces a very stark choice. Is it going to grant full political rights to all the people in that area, in essence destroying Israel's Jewish character? Or is it going to rule over, essentially, a population as a minority to whom it doesn't grant the same political rights? And of course, I'm speaking of the Palestinians and the territories, not the Israeli Arab citizens, which do enjoy the same political rights as Jewish Israelis. And if that choice were made, Israel becomes a profoundly undemocratic place, subject to incredible international isolation. It's important to note that Zionism has two foundational principles, democracy and Jewish character. I'm a Zionist, and I very much want Israel to remain a state that has a Jewish character and is a democracy, and I fear that this demographic shift, in the absence of the emergence of a Palestinian state, will mean that Israel has to sacrifice one of those two, in essence, destroying the Zionist dream.
You know, very interesting challenge, I would think, for J Street, because while some of the Jewish community has been nervous about the development of a pro-Israel lobby over the last 5 years of J Street's existence, that wasn't quite as immediately supportive of the Israeli government, no matter what it did. On the other side, there are many Jews who are not so pro-Israel in general, not so Zionistic. All you have to do is walk on a college campus just about anywhere in America to see some of that. How does J Street choose its positions?
Right. Well, I mean, what J Street set out to do is provide a voice to the majority of Jewish Americans who strongly support Israel and a two-state resolution. And, that's where 82% of our community, the Jewish American community, is clustered. So that really is the centrist majority view. Now, there are right and left flanks. There are approximately 15-18% of American Jews who do not support a two-state solution, either from the right or the left. On the right, there are some who support, you know, some of the more extremist settler movements that want to essentially have a greater Israel and annex much, if not all, of the West Bank. But again, that would inevitably lead to a situation where Israel is facing, would face unbelievable international pressure, and probably which, you know, if the past history of other states in those situations were examined, Israel could not survive under that situation. At the same time, there's very much a threat from left-wingers who want a one-state solution on the basis of a binational state, which would destroy Israel's Jewish character. You know, the Jewish people, because of our history, because of our you know, our historical claim to this land, has a legitimate right to have a Jewish state with a Jewish character in this area.
It's okay to have one Jewish country in the world where Jews have lived for 200 years or more.
That's exactly right. And so the argument that, you know, it's more important to resolve the conflict than anything else, you know, peace at any cost, that's not right. I mean, we are a pro-peace lobby, but we are first a pro-Israel lobby. And to us, the existence of Israel as a state that is both democratic and has a Jewish character is simply non-negotiable.
Let's talk a little bit about, it seems to me that Ariel Sharon was one of the first people to see the demographic challenge and make some shocking, really, for those who'd known his career, you know, as the father of the settlements, shocking choices to pull out of Gaza. How do you respond to who are now pretty well-educated American lawmakers who say, well, wait a minute, you know, Israel pulled out of Gaza and now they have to keep going in there, and they, you know, they keep sending rockets, and the rockets can now reach Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. I mean, we can see this on the news.
Gaza is a perfect example of how not to try to reduce a conflict without a negotiated resolution. The lesson of Gaza is that you have to have an agreement to end the conflict. You simply can't remove some of the elements of the conflict and expect it to be okay. The only thing which will resolve the conflict is a negotiated resolution. One of the things we're seeing...
It's sort of a great point, not just about Gaza, but actually about Lebanon, where Israel pulled out and Hezbollah moved in.
Exactly.
And that was under Barak.
So. Right. And it's important to note that there are historical precedents on the other side, which is to say, you know, In the deep past, you had Egypt and Jordan, very much, you know,
negotiated settlements with sovereign nations.
Exactly, and these were states which, you know, spoke of the destruction of Israel and et cetera, destruction
pushed
of the
Jews Zion. Into the sea.
Exactly,
and the,
and the peace was negotiated with them, and now, you know, one of the top priorities of the Israeli government, as well as American supporters of Israel like us, is to ensure that these treaties are maintained. And, you know, despite the turmoil in Egypt, which could pretty much go in any direction, even for the government there, which is much more radical than those we have seen in the past, they are taking great efforts, at least in private conversations with the Israelis and the Americans, to assure us that, you know, that treaty will remain in place, and that peace will remain in place, because it is so essential to Israel's security, and it's actually essential to the security of Egypt, Jordan, and, you know, the Arab states, which have decided to make peace and recognize Israel.
President Obama is going to Israel later this month. That's his first trip as president. He went before he was elected. It's pretty interesting itinerary. He's going to be in Jerusalem. He's going to be meeting, theoretically anyway, with Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah. Then he's going on to Jordan. What do you encourage? I mean, not that you have the ability to shape the president's itinerary or policies, but...
Well, we'd like to think we can contribute.
Exactly. So what would you contribute?
It's great that the president is going early, basically as early as he can in his second term.
Right.
You know, we would have liked to have seen him go in his first term. But no matter when he goes, whether it's now or had it been in his first term, we would hope that that trip will now be productive on the peace front. It is very important for the president to go and talk about the security assurances, talk about the security relationship, talk about the threats, the very real threats Israel faces from Iran, from Syria, from some of its other neighbors. But at the same time, because the two-state resolution is also essential to Israel's security and survival, we really hope the president does take significant steps to put, you know, his seal of approval, if nothing else, on a renewed effort to make real progress on the peace front. you know, he has a very limited time to do this. We've seen from the example of past presidents that when they wait till the end of their second term, they have very little power to actually get things done.
And we saw that with Clinton, most obviously. I think.
Most obviously with Clinton, and then, of course, with George W. Bush as well. And so we're hoping that, you know, while the president is now on the upswing, having won this election quite handily and with 70% of support from Jewish people, which tracks past Democratic candidates for the president perfectly since exit polling began, that he will use this moment to actually really make a bold push, although I don't expect any particulars to come, you know, from the trip itself. But in subsequent months, you know, the 2 or 3 months following that trip will be a really important key moment to see what this administration is actually willing to put forward in terms of getting the parties back together and making real progress.
Just kind of a practical question. How much influence do U.S. lawmakers, senators, congressmen, and of course the president, really have over creating a productive peace process that leads to an agreement? Creating a process is one thing. Sometimes they develop their own momentum. But with Mahmoud Abbas, with Abu Mazen's sort of, I don't want to say his clinging to power, you know, after all, the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan has been clinging to power for like 50 years.
Right.
So it means something a little different. But, you know, he's got to look at Hamas all around him. He's got to look at the influence of Hezbollah in the region. His own motivations may not be so obvious or transparent. How much influence does the U.S. government really have?
I think, you know, a strong U.S. president acting in concert with the international community has a lot more ability to move a peace process forward than people give us credit for. You know, the situation on the ground is not ideal, but it's never ideal. And if, you know, current trends
we are talking about the Middle East.
The Middle East, right. It can only get worse. You know, looking at the Palestinian leadership, you know, President Abbas is you know, probably not the ideal Palestinian leader that Israel and the United States would want, but he's honestly a genuine partner for peace. That's what Prime Minister Ehud Olmert told us at our last J Street conference, that, you know, he is convinced that President Abbas is a partner for peace. And look at the alternative. It's not like if Abbas steps down or is driven from power, we're going to get Salam Fayyad, the prime minister. We're right. going to get an unknown, or worse, a known, far more extreme than either of these gentlemen. So these are the partners for peace, and the best partners for peace we're likely going to have. On the Israeli side, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu has said he would support a two-state resolution under certain conditions. I believe him. I think he has to deal with a very complex domestic political system that has gotten even more complex with this recent election. And now he has to kind of navigate a Scylla and Charybdis between, you know, a growing right-wing extremist settler party and the Jewish Home Party, and the rise of the centrists, who, although their concerns are more domestically oriented, speak more openly about the need for a two-state resolution. And I think that's an environment where a president coming in, a U.S. president coming in with a real vision, actually provides political cover both to the Israeli government and to the Palestinian government that's needed to actually progress and conclude a peace.
So really a moment of opportunity now.
Absolutely a moment of opportunity, but one that is not going to last more than 18 months at most.
Kind of a window. I want to thank Dylan Williams for a great visit here. Can you tell us where people can go to find out more about J Street?
Absolutely. Just go to our website, jstreet.org, www.jstreet.org, and we'd be happy to put you on our email list and help you get active in any way that you would like to.
Thanks very much. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Carol Myers, the outstanding archaeologist and author of a new book on women at the time of the Bible. Our playout this morning in preparation for Passover comes from the Yale a cappella group Magevet. It's Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the Prophet, for the Seder in 2 weeks, and also, I guess, for a Shavua Tov, a good week.
My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Yeah.